Get ready to hear the truth about America on a show that's not immune to the facts with your host, Dan Bongino.
Welcome to the Dan Bongino Show. Producer Joe, how are you today?
Oh, ready to go on this Friday, Dan.
Yeah, hey, I'll be in for Levin tonight. Mark right. Levin, Denali, the great one. So tune in, 6 to 9 Eastern, or check out marklevinshow.com. If you want to call in, the number is 877-381-3811 tonight. Happy to take your calls on the air. Always happy to take some liberals, too. You know, I love debating liberals on the air. They usually, sadly, don't make themselves look good on the air, but that's okay. That's what happens when you embed yourself knee deep in the tar of dopey liberal ideology and you can't get out. You're like, I cannot escape. So I love it when you call in. All right, let me dig right into it. So legal insurrection story I saw this morning. Fantastic. Fantastic. Mm. I'm surprisingly in a good mood considering the fact that I told Joe I have the worst head cold ever.
Yeah.
But I'm serious, folks. I've always told you I would never do a show ever. Right, Joe? If I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's, you know, I don't like to dial it in. I feel fine. I mean, contrary to that viral video that went viral with the lady who talks about the man cold, how when men have colds, they write their wills and they won't get out of bed for days. I was in the gym yesterday crushing it. I was in the sauna, back on the leg press, throwing up some heavy pinwheels. I really don't feel too bad. So I'm stoked to do the show with that today. Shockingly, I should be in bed complaining, can't move. But I saw this story this morning, legal insurrection, super good. About something very sensitive to me, and that's just the Democrats' love affair, again, with identity politics. And, you know, sometimes I think I do maybe a poor job of explaining to you the why here. Now, the legal insurrection article I'm about to cite, which will be in the show notes today at Bongino.com, please sign up for my email list. I will send you these articles. It makes it real easy for us to get the best information out there. I do a lot of homework every morning trying to get you the best 5 or 6 articles per day I can find on the internet so you don't have to do all this research. You're busy. You have busy lives. I get paid to do this for you. So go to Bongino.com and subscribe to my email list there. But the central tenet of the legal insurrection piece show is that there's no future in identity politics. None. That there's no, strategically speaking. Now, the Democrats will continue doing it forever because now they're married to it. And when I say identity politics, I mean the use of race, gender, religion, sex, sexual orientation, union affiliation, basically anything to associate you with anything other than ideas, to attach you to a group rather than ideas. Right, and that's maybe that doesn't make sense. The Democrats, a long time ago, post JFK, figured out that in order to lurch farther to the left, Joe, to marry themselves to the idea of redistribution, the idea of central government control, the idea of central government planning, they understood at their heart, at their core, that these ideas were not going to be strategically and politically popular. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other words, post JFK, the socialists who took over the Democrat Party wanted government control. But at the same time, they knew government control through redistribution of income, heavy taxation, big bureaucracy, state planning. They knew, because they're not stupid, they knew these were inherently unpopular ideas. Give us more of your money. Give us control of your health care. Let us pick where your kid goes to school is not necessarily a winning platform.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's part one of the puzzle here. This is going to be an important show, folks. Please don't tune out. I put a lot of work into today's show because this means a lot to me. That strategy was never going to work if you were honest about it. In other words, hey, give us your money. Give us your business. Give us your kids. Give us the education system. Give us everything. It was never going to work for the obvious reason, so I explain this thoroughly, that human beings are naturally liberty-loving creatures. We are. We just don't want to be controlled. I mean, think about it, Joe. I mean, be very serious for a moment.
Yeah.
Why is jail such a penalty for people? Like, jail, oh my gosh, why?
Well, you're completely controlled.
Right, but Joe, what's so bad about it,
though? You lose your freedom.
Yeah, but, well, really, I get that. And, you're summing up my point adequately. But when you think about it, Joe, really, what, if it's not a, let's say it's not like a jail in Venezuela or something like that. I mean, what's so bad about it, right? You get 3 hots, may not be the best meals in the world, but you ain't cooking them.
3 hots in a cot.
You get a bed, you don't have to do anything. I mean, they don't, it's not really, there's very little forced labor anymore. What's so bad about jail? Yes. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic, folks, and Joe gets it.
Yeah.
But my point is that jail sucks because people want to be free to do what they want to do, to go where they want to go. They don't want to be controlled. Now, the idea that socialists and the socialists that have taken over the Democrat Party post-JFK understood this, they needed a vehicle, a messaging vehicle, to implement this strategy long-term while not being honest about what the strategy is. I mean, when was the last Democrat outside of Walter Mondale, right, that ran on a platform of raising taxes and won the nomination for president? You may say, oh, Bernie. No, he didn't win. He lost.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to raise your taxes. People don't want that. Mondale got crushed running on, I'm going to raise your taxes. People don't want it. They don't want their freedom taken away. So as a vehicle to move that agenda along, we want your money, we want the power, we want control over your lives. The Democrats fell in love with this old Marxist idea of attaching people to an identity and getting them to believe that they are the ones that are going to protect that identity against these usurpers and these bad people out there. So they fell in love with the idea of identity politics. And the essence of identity politics was, okay, we're not going to get people to vote for us based on the idea that higher taxes and bigger government are a good idea. So what we're going to do is we're going to get people to vote for us because we are the protectors. We are going to be the ones who provide an overwatch for them. We're going to be the ones that provide a blanket of security for them against these evil people that are coming for them. And who are those evil people, Joe? The Republicans and the conservatives. So they fell in love with the idea of the istophobic phobophobe strategy. You know, call people racist, call people homophobic, call people Islamophobic, call them misogynistic, and tell these groups, women, Islamic Americans, Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, tell these people, don't tell them what you want from them. You want their money, you want their kids, you want their health care, you want everything. Tell them you are going to be the ones to protect them from these evil, rapacious Republicans and conservatives that hate them and are coming after them because they're racist and they don't like them. Does that make sense, Joe?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That was the vehicle.
Yeah.
Now, so we have part one. Part one, we have to implement a big state, big government strategy. Part two, we know that's unpopular. Part three, how do we alter the messaging to disguise it? Part four, tell people people are coming after them because they are X, Black, Hispanic, gay, women. Part five, tell people we are going to protect them against the people that are coming after them because they are X. But part six is critical. Part six is the linchpin to this entire devious little operation, Joe. Part six is, get people to attach themselves to X over anything else first. Now, here's what I mean by that.
All right.
And this is where the article comes into play. And it's a fantastic piece. I hope you read it. I know Joe. I know Joe pretty well. Joe does not identify even as a Republican or a conservative first. The thing that matters to Joe, I can almost, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but I can almost, Joe's a dad first. And Joe's probably, no, you know what? I take that back. Joe is a son of God first. He's a dad second. If I'm wrong, again, correct me. And Joe is an employee of an operation third, and a co-worker here at the operation. Is that right? Does that sound about reasonable?
Pretty close, yeah. The first two are probably tied.
First two, yeah, probably tied, right, for Joe. I mean, I am, you know, God, family, job. That's my thing. Conservatism, you know, is probably fourth, maybe tied with third, right?
I'm a registered unaffiliated.
Yeah, I get it. I know you've been let down by a lot of the Republicans in Maryland over the years. But when that's your order of priority, when you triage your responsibility to the world and God and family are first and everything else is second, you will vote according to what advances those priorities. Joe, please, if I lose you, stop me.
You're not losing me. I'm right with you.
So if Joe's priority is God and family, Joe is going to vote for politicians regardless of their political affiliation that back up his values. People that don't attack his faith, people that do what's better for his family. They make his family more prosperous, get them better health care, get them a better education. Does this all make sense? None of this is mysterious.
Nope.
But strategic point number six for the Democrat implementation of the big government regime is to detach people first from God and family, and replace priority number one with self-preservation. In other words, self-preservation is I am black first, or I am Hispanic first, and I am a woman first, and that matters to me more than God and family. Therefore, who is attacking those things? Republicans. Therefore, who am I going to vote for? The Democrats. You don't even know why you're voting for Democrats. You just know you're voting for them to protect you against those people. Now, I can, you know, I don't want to say I can prove this, but I can provide pretty sound evidence. Amy Horowitz, who is I just met recently at a Christmas party up in New York. He has a video out. It's AMI, Amy Horowitz, of him on the streets of New York. It's a fascinating video. You know what? I'll find it. Let me take a note on that. And I'll put it in the show notes. Hold on a sec. Amy, I just want to take, I don't want to forget, folks. There's a video of him on the streets of New York. These, you know, these man on the street interviews, Joe, you just bring a mic out and you pick randos on the street and you interview him. And in the interview, he says, listen, I'm going to present to you Bernie Sanders' tax plan. These people are obviously liberals. And I want you to tell me what you think. And he lists out Bernie Sanders' tax plan. And the people are like, that's great. I love it. That is so awesome. Oh, it's so fantastic. What do you think the tax plan was? The tax plan was not Amy Horowitz's tax plan. It was not Bernie Sanders' tax plan. It was Trump's. And they loved it. But when they found out it was not Bernie's plan, it was Trump. Watch the look on their faces. They're like, they don't know what to say because they're starting to realize now that they just didn't like the tax plan because it was Donald Trump. When the tax plan is free of labels, they love it. It's a great video. It provides more evidence about what I'm telling you here, that people are not voting when they fall into the strategic trap the far left has set for them by identifying with skin color, race, religion first, and identifying with the protector class of Democrats. They're not voting on issues. They're voting almost exclusively on the idea that they are under attack because they are victims. Folks, this has been an intentional strategy by the left for decades now. Through critical theory. Critical theory is the junk theory that everything right now, math, science, whatever it is, that there is no objective fact. It's all a subjective interpretation of reality meant to reinforce a white patriarchal power structure. You're like, what? What? Come again? It basically means this. Everything Republicans say is garbage, no matter what. If you say 2 + 2 = I'm not kidding, folks. A critical theory. If a Republican tells you or a conservative 2 + 2 = 4 or a white male, they're probably just telling you that to reinforce the power structure of science to oppress minorities. Critical theory has been taught in schools for years, and it gets you to believe you are a chronic victim. The Democrats cannot exist in the future without creating a victim class because a victim class needs a protector. And who's the protector, Joe? Them. Mm-hmm. Now, what does this have to do with the piece? In the piece, William Jacobson, who's the professor who runs Legal Insurrection, a really cool blog, says the problem they're having with this long term, Joe, is that identity politics first requires you to identify with a victim class so that the Democrats can protect you, right? I mean, if your whole theory is if you're Hispanic, you're under attack by these horrible conservatives and the Democrats are going to protect you, in order for you to vote that way and suppress all your other voting instincts about what's good and bad and replace them with, I need to be protected by Democrats, first you have to be a victim, but second you have to identify with the victim, with the victimized class. The problem they're having with very specifically Hispanic voters, as he addresses in the piece, is that they're not identifying with being Hispanic. Huh. That's kind of a problem, Joe. If your long-term strategy is, hey, Hispanic voters, we're going to be the ones out there who are going to protect you against these horrible conservatives, it requires people to say, I'm Hispanic. The problem they're having is, and you can read the data in the piece, the percentage of people in, what do you want to call them? Mixed marriages? It's ridiculous. It's nothing mixed. My wife is Hispanic. I mean, we're not mixed anything. We're human beings. Like mixed, like I married a dog or something. Mixed marriage. So dumb. But this is the terminology the left uses, Joe. You understand? It gets you to believe there's a distinction. Mixed, sure, meaning different things, right? That the only difference, my wife's a female and I'm a male. That's it.
All right. Good
but they
difference.
Want you to... Right, right. It's dumb, but they want you to believe there's a difference. My wife's Hispanic. Oh my God, it's a mixed marriage. So dumb. But the point they make in the piece is the children of, like, my children are a great example. Mm-hmm. are Italian, Irish, German, and my wife is all Colombian. So they're, what, 50% Colombian? Who even knows? I mean, how do you know? How do you know exactly the gene profile, right? But assuming according to traditional dopey identity politics, my kids are half Hispanic, are a majority of their whatever genes, air quotes here, are going to be of Colombian derivation. And they should, Joe, according to identity politics, right, identify as Hispanic. But they don't. They are, but they don't. Now, why don't they? Because in my house, we're not perfect. We're all sinners. I say that all the time. But we are church-going people. You know, we pray together. We go to church together. And we value liberty and freedom. And that's taught in my household. And when I teach my kids that, I don't devalue my wife's heritage. My wife's, you know, she's a proud American. Believe me, Joe, and you know that. You know her well.
Absolutely.
But she's not, you know, she's not proud from being from Colombia either. She had some great experiences in the country, you know. She still, you know, follows what goes on over there and everything, but she's an American now, and she knows that. We teach American pride in our house. So my kids don't identify with being Hispanic. They identify with being human beings who fear God and love liberty and love their country. So it's going to be very difficult for you to convince my kids later in life that they're victims of something. Victims of what? This is happening in households all over America, specifically with regard, and he addresses another ethnic group, Joe, not just Hispanics, in the piece I'm discussing here.
Mm-hmm.
It addresses Asian Americans, too. Oh, this is great. Rep. Rodney Davis to introduce a bill making tax changes permanent. Oh, we're talking about this today. Check mark right there. Getting back to that. Sorry, folks. I didn't mean to give you a look squirrel moment, but it just came on Fox. This is the greatest idea ever. Asian Americans, too. There are, using the leftist ideology, using their silly quotes here, Joe, Asian Americans are in mixed marriages. Again, there's nothing mixed about it. There's two human beings who got married. But, oh, Asian Americans and white Americans, oh, there's a mix there. The children of Asian Americans are not identifying as Asian. They're identifying as Americans. Folks, this is creating a long-term problem for the number six. Strategic tenet number six of the liberal strategy. Get people to identify first with a victimized group before anything else. If you don't consider yourself part of that, Joe, victimized group, and you consider yourself an American, the rhetoric they use, oh, everybody's anti-immigrant, you don't see it that way because you're like, well, that's not me. My wife is an immigrant. My kids will say my mother was an immigrant, but we weren't victimized at all. We lived the American dream, and we were taught that in our household. We're American.
Right.
Do you see how the strategy long-term can't possibly succeed? Now, I will say this, and read the piece. It gives some pretty good data on actual numbers of people in first, second, and third generation, Joe, immigrants from Hispanic and Asian American, how less and less over the course of generations, less and less of their kids associate with being Hispanic or Asian and just associate with being white or American or whatever it may be. It's kind of tough to implement that strategy long term when the strategy requires people to align with a victimized class and they don't. Hmm. Now, having said this, this is a bit of an uncomfortable topic, and I understand I'm treading on dangerous territory here, but it would be disingenuous for me not to bring this up. Whereas over time, the Republicans are doing well, and I think better in certain cases in some traditionally what the left would call Hispanic communities. I mean, Greg Abbott in Texas, the governor, won 40%+ of the Hispanic vote. We've had governors in Larry Hogan in Maryland did very well with Hispanic voters. Republicans are doing better with Hispanic voters, and I think it's precisely because of that, because they don't see themselves as Hispanic voters. They see themselves as Americans or as patriots and constitution lovers, right? The problem we're having, so just to be clear on that, what the point I'm making is Hispanic voters are losing over time as they are in America, marry people who may be white, maybe non-Hispanic. They are losing affiliation with what the Democrats want you to believe is a victimized class. There is a victimized class that the liberals constantly court as voters that have been remarkably consistent in their affiliation with the Democrat Party, and that's black voters. Now, when you think about it on its face, it makes a lot of sense, folks. Being Hispanic we are visual creatures, right, Joe? Dogs are visual, but they're olfactory too. Dogs sniff their way around the world. We are largely visual creatures. Yeah, we smell and we hear, obviously, but we are visual creatures. You know, the primary way we navigate through the world is by sight. Things matter to us that we can see.
Right.
It's very difficult to see Hispanicness. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yeah.
Like, you've met my wife, and people mistake my wife for Italian all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Matter of fact, ironically, people think I'm Hispanic, not my wife. My kids, you would never in a million years guess they were Hispanic. My niece and nephew, who are half Hispanic as well, they're Puerto Rican, you would never in a million years phenotypically guess that they were Hispanic. They have blonde hair and blue eyes.
I've actually had people ask me, what is that Bongino?
All the time.
I said, he's Italian, man.
People think I'm Filipino.
Yeah.
People think I'm black. I get it all the time.
Yeah.
The problem with having people associate with a victimized class first is the victimized class, Joe, has to be obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to people. In other words, as my kids go, it's not obvious. The problem with skin color, with us being visual creatures, is and skin color is a line to be very careful. There's not like a black white distinction. There's obviously a gradient, but skin color is easier to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's therefore easier for Democrats to manipulate the identity politics strategy because it's easier for people to see it and align with it. You know what I'm saying, Joe? Like, Hispanicness is kind of like, wait, what does that really mean? I mean, are you 50%, 40%? You know, it's easier to identify and grab people whose skin color is easy to see and say to them, look, you're a victimized class and we're going to protect you against the Republicans, even when the Republicans do things that I think largely benefit the black community. School choice, you know, enterprise zones, low tax areas and inner cities, public safety. I think that's why you're seeing an allegiance to the Democrat Party fail with Asian Americans. It's going to fail over time, even worse with Hispanic Americans. But we're going to have a tougher time in the black community because the Democrats constantly target them, black Americans, because they understand the visual nature of skin color. And I don't want to listen. To be completely candid, I don't want to. And you know this, Joe, I never minimize the historical impact of Jim Crow and slavery on black America. We should never say that did not happen to Hispanic Americans. It didn't happen to Asian Americans outside of World War II with the internment. But black Americans have had a unique amount of suffering in America historically.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats are exploiting that over time to make sure that the identity politics within the black voting class stays alive and well so that they can envision themselves as the protectors, or portray themselves, I should say, as the protectors of the black voting class. And it's sad, folks, because I really believe the conservative agenda is an agenda for the large population of black Americans I met when I actually ran for office and spoke to people, knocked on doors. It's just sad. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yeah.
I think that's why you're seeing identity politics work well with the Democrats in black America, but is dissipating a bit with Hispanic and Asian Americans, precisely because you're going to see over time it's just tougher for them to do it.
I think that's a good way for you to explain your POV there, man. Yeah.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. All right. You know what? We're going to have a fake news alert again after this, but I got to get through this first. But this is the funniest story. As a Secret Service agent, Joe, I have a very unique perspective into the latest Donald Trump fake news story. So prepare the air horn, Joe. All right. Today's show brought to you by our buddies at My Patriot Supply. Folks, I can't say enough about this product because it could literally one day save your life, not figuratively. I mean, we insure everything in our lives that matters. Think about it. You insure your car, you insure your home, you insure your health, you insure your life. People have life insurance. You insure everything in your life that matters. Why would you not insure your food supply? Think about it. That's crazy. I live in a hurricane zone here in Florida. And after the last hurricane, Irma, and we had Matthew the year before, the grocery shelves in the local grocery store were barren for a couple of days. Now, a couple of days probably isn't going to get anybody hurt. You can go to your neighbor, you can get some food. Most people stocked up before. But ladies and gentlemen, think about the very real possibility of a catastrophic supply chain fail, an EMP attack, a massive storm that really locks up the highways. What would you do if it was 2 weeks? No, I'm serious. What would you do if it was a month? if a Katrina-like disaster happened and at the same time we had some infrastructure collapse? What would you do? You want to look at your kids?
Yeah, I'm eating cats.
You're going right for the cats?
You
People
bet.
Go for the pigeons? They'll go for the squirrels? This guy emails me all the time, says squirrels delicious. Never tried it. You want? No, I mean, you're only half kidding. Like, you would go for the cats.
Yeah.
Because you got to eat. And so do your kids. You're not going to let them starve. Folks, why you wouldn't ensure your food supply is crazy. Please go check it out. Go to preparewithdan.com. That's preparewithdan.com. And our friends at My Patriot Supply will get you a 1 month emergency supply of food for just $99. That's at preparewithdan.com. The food lasts 25 years, not 2.5, 25 years. Stick it in your closet. Hopefully you never need it, but better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it. Go check it out, preparewithdan.com. Pick up your 1 month supply of emergency food. Again, just $99. It is easy food insurance. My recommendation, folks, you have four people in your household like I do, go get four boxes. If you can only start with one now, get one. But have something so you have a basic insurance plan in case, God forbid, the food supply is interrupted, even temporarily. You have to be able to get... They tell, you know what's funny, Joe? They tell Americans, have 6 months of savings in case of an emergency. What, are you going to eat the money? Great, that's a good idea financially. But unless you're going to boil it and try to get the paper pulp out of it, you can't eat the money. Have a month's supply of emergency food. Go to preparewithdan.com and pick it up today. Hey, one note before I get to our fake news of the day. Some of you here, there's one very perceptive guy, Arsenio M. He sends me emails. He's like, hey, will you shut that alarm off in the background for your fire alarm? Do you all hear that? The beep once in a while? That's not my fire alarm. That's my house thing. I know I got to move the box and stuff. It's like, it's not far from my office, but it just went off. That's why I bring that up. But that's my, if it really annoys you, let me know on email. I'm going to move it eventually. That's not a fire alarm. It is, I have my house and cameras and stuff and, you know, me, Mr. Secret Service and alarms and things like that. That's an alarm. That's like a window alarm or a door alarm. So I just wanted to bring it up. Thank you, Arsenio. You are the first person out of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of listeners who has ever picked that up and emailed me about it. So thank you. All right, Joe, please, the fake news alert of the day, go.
This is a fake news alert. The story you're about to hear is inaccurate, bogus, or just a bunch of crap. This is a fake news alert.
Dude, this guy's crazy. I said to him, go send me one of those air alarms. We got an email from a listener and he does this whole thing. This is a fake news. Oh, big classic. No, this is a fake news alert though. I saw this story yesterday and I had to laugh. CNN at it again. They are on a investigative witch hunt, Joe. Not about Russian collusion this time. Oh. To find out why. I'm not making this up, by the way. I'll put the story in the show notes today. You can read it yourselves at the Washington Examiner. To find out why a white box truck blocked their view of Trump golfing so that they could get a picture. There's all kinds of conspiracy theories out there as to why this happened. They didn't want a picture of Trump golfing, so that the Secret Service had to move this box truck. I'm not kidding. This is a real story, so they couldn't get a picture of it. You know, this, like, it's as if it's some kind of exclusive, by the way, that Trump is going golfing. Like, people don't know. I mean, they're in the motorcade, these people. They know where he's going. He's going to the golf course. So, folks, the theory is that, oh, they did this just to hurt CNN and not give them a picture of Trump golfing. And they're saying the Secret Service did it, may have done this on purpose. There's all kinds of innuendo and insinuations in there. Folks, I was a Secret Service agent. Let me explain to you how this works for all the dopes out there in the media who haven't figured this out remarkably. When the president is on a golf course, Joe, in case you didn't notice this, yeah, a golf course is relatively flat. Have you ever golfed on a mountain?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever golfed on a set of hills?
Very mild hills.
I mean, rolling hills. I mean, I'm, but not like hills like you would sled down one, right? Like, you haven't golfed off the... Okay, so we're clear on that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly flat terrain. You know, you have sand traps and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's relatively flat, right?
Right.
Okay, so when you're going on like the ninth tee box, there's not a mountain in front of you that you have to hit the ball over, right?
Oh, no.
So now, Joe, you were not a security professional in a prior life, correct?
That's correct, Dan.
I'm going to ask you a basic question that apparently CNN can't figure out. And this is a genuine test here, Joe. So
okay.
This is going to be tough.
All right.
If you were a sniper, Joe, and you were looking to take out a target, right? So a target, say, 200-300 yards away. It's a pretty easy sniper shot for a sniper, right?
All right.
Do you prefer, Joe, an unobstructed view to your target? Or do you prefer a mountain and a truck in front of your target that you have to magically curve the bullet around? Which one?
The unobstructed view is always preferable, Dan.
Joe, how did you figure that out? You're not a security guy?
No, Dan, I'm not.
So you don't want to have to shoot through a truck or a mountain to hit your target?
That's correct, Dan.
That's amazing. I don't know how you figured that out. Joe, I'm serious. Of all the EPs in this business, you are clearly the smartest. You almost never get these questions wrong. Folks, Joe is not a former Secret Service agent or a police officer. Joe has been a sound engineer for a very long time. Yes. And even Joe can figure out that what the Secret Service does is it prevents this thing, LOS, line of sight.
Right.
You do not want a clear line of sight to your protectee on a golf course or anywhere else because you don't want your protectee to get shot. The reason the Secret Service uses box trucks, garbage trucks, satellite trucks, and school buses, which we've used everywhere all the time on every single site I've been involved with for 12 years I was in the Secret Service doing protection for everyone from the Bharat Jagdeo from, I don't even remember where he was from. Was that, like, serious? I remember that early on in my career. Gosh, that site, that was like one of the first to President Clinton. You don't want a line of sight to your... here's another one. Moshe Katsev. He was the president of Israel. I remember that site. That was one of my earliest sites, too. You line up these buses and these satellite trucks to prevent a sniper from getting an easy shot at your target. Clearly, Joe could figure this out. Joe is not a journalist or a security professional. It's amazing to me that CNN actually thinks this was done or is insinuating that this was done because they think they were trying to block their picture. No, they're trying to block a bullet. They're trying to block a 50 caliber bullet at thousands of feet per second from destroying the life of the president of the United States and throwing the country into chaos. Oh, shocker. I mean, that they're stunned by this is amazing. I want you to read the Washington Examiner piece I'll put in the show notes, how CNN is for 2 days, Joe. I'm not kidding. For 2 days has been on this topic about why the white box truck has blocked their view to the president. Was it Guyana? This is going to drive me crazy, the whole show. Bharat Jagdeo. I remember that site like it was yesterday. It was a wedding on Long Island. Gosh, that was like, I think it was my first site ever. Man, I should know that. I think it was Guyana, but I'll have to look. The little things get in my head. But that's, folks, it's a fake news story. The Secret Service is not in the business of blocking photography. However, they are in the business of blocking high-powered rounds from penetrating the body of the President of the United States. Dopes. What a stupid story. I mean, seriously. Read this. I'm not kidding, Joe. They're following box trucks around, trying to get license plates. They're calling the Secret Service to figure out whose box truck it was. You think I'm making this up? Read the story. The Secret Service, CNN has no such curiosity about finding Russian collusion, because there is none, so they avoid actual investigative work. But they're deeply concerned about where the white box truck had come from. I mean, it's just conspiracy theories on steroids. It's nonsensical. Oh, all right. Hey, check out my Facebook today. This is quick. I just want to blow past this, but it is important. I have a picture on my Facebook. I'm the blue check verified page on Facebook, not the imposter page. Facebook allows imposter pages, so be careful out there, which is unbelievable, by the way. But I have a picture up on Facebook. Joe, did you hear the story about the NFL? This is insane. Like, you want to talk about an epic lesson in brand deconstruction, brand devaluation, and just the destruction of a successful business model. I'm telling you, the NFL will be taught in business schools in 10 years, this example, as what not to do. They will list out the 10 things the NFL did and say, don't do any of these things. Do the opposite. So, you know, Colin Kaepernick, who started this whole thing, when it started, he wore these socks, and these socks had the cops depicted as pigs, which is, you know, grotesquely offensive to any reasonable American. Kaepernick's the kneeler, of course. But again, on these socks, he had the cops depicted as pigs, and I don't remember any significant sanction by the NFL. So this past week, some guy wore cleats with had jingle bells on it. It was like a Santa themed cleat. It was like red and white and that kind of thing. I have a picture up on my Facebook page. That guy's getting fined and sanctioned, Joe. Because Joe, cops is pigs. That's all legit. But Santa Claus cleats, no way. You definitely can't have that. So just quick, check it out on my Facebook. You'll see how the NFL is being run by complete loons, total zeros who are going to have presided over the destruction of one of the greatest business models in American history. Incredible. All right. Today's show also brought to you by our buddies at Brickhouse Nutrition. These guys have been with us from the beginning. I think this is one of the best nutrition companies out there. And you know what I love about this this company? They are hungry. They put out high quality, top notch, scientifically researched products that are the best in the business. And one of the products they put out that I am a personal fan of, I personally requested they put this out there because it's so good, is Field of Greens. Field of Greens is a ground up fruit and vegetable powder that you can put in a juice, you can put in water, you can put in your protein shakes, you can put it in whatever you'd like. It tastes delicious. It's got a very sweet taste. I think it comes from the tart cherry in there and the licorice, but it's really, really good. And it is a superfood on steroids. It is terrific. Folks, no credible person in the nutrition science arena would deny the fact that fruits and vegetables are the staple and core of a healthy diet. I mean, I've told you about the research in the Christmas Cuts episode. People who eat salads had brains 11 years younger. You see benefits to immunity. You see benefits all over your body from the micronutrients and macronutrients in fruits and vegetables. You have to get your servings of fruits and vegetables in a day. Here's the problem. Most people don't have the time. I live a busy life. I got a ton of things to do today. I got a fill-in for Levin later. I got a fox head. I got busy things going on. A lot of people don't have the time to prepare 8 to 9 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. This, you'll knock out a ton of your servings right away. Just take two scoops of this a day, the Field of Greens. It tastes delicious. Here's my trick. I put it in green tea and V8, and I add a little collagen in. It is my superfood. I swear by it. Folks, this is a great product. Think about all the products you're going to get in there that you can't eat every day. You could, but it's going to be tough. Kale, spinach, cherry, licorice. You get all your berry groups in there. You get all kinds of probiotic, prebiotic benefits. This is a terrific product. Go give it a shot, Field of Greens. It's available at brickhousenutrition.com/Dan. That's brickhousenutrition.com/Dan. Pick up Field of Greens today. brickhousenutrition.com/Dan. You won't regret it. Send me your reviews. You're going to love it. Daniel@Bongino.com. It tastes delicious too. All right. Joe, here is a... Here's a pretty crazy story I saw at Zero Hedge, one of my other favorite blogs. Mm-hmm. The housing market in the United States, Zero Hedge is making a case in this piece that we may be living through another housing bubble, and we may. Here are some quick numbers if you're a homeowner or a renter out there. This should concern you either way. If you're a renter, because if there's a crash, it would be terrible for everyone, but a good time for you to buy. And if you're a homeowner, it'd be terrible for you all around. In 2017, Joe, the housing market jumped, went up in value 6.5%. This is the highest rate in 4 years. $2 trillion more was added to the value of the housing stock in the United States. Now, this is a staggering number. I was actually unaware of this. I thought it was closer to 15. The value of the entire housing market in the United States is an astonishing $31 trillion. That is three times the size of China's entire economy. Now, I only bring this up. Are we in a housing bubble? I don't know. I don't know because building slowed down after the Great Recession. I'm obviously a big believer in a market clearing price and the intersection of supply-demand curve. I'm not sure if we're above that, below that. I am relatively sure, though, that the decrease in stock is kind of married up that supply-demand curve at the right spot, that there's not an oversupply problem. So I'm not sure we're in a housing bubble right now, but I bring this up on a note of optimism. It is the end of the year. I don't want to leave you off every day with the liberals are coming for us talk because they are. There's a lot of good stuff going on, too. And this is really a good story. And the good part about this is think about it. We're $20 trillion in debt. I mean, that is definitely worth shedding a tear over once in a while. How much debt this country, the government has put this country and the citizens of it in. We're in a lot of debt right now. But Joe, when you really think about it, mm-hmm. we are so wealthy as a country. The housing stock alone, if you had a house worth, you know, $300,000 and you were only $200,000 in debt, you're in a bad way, but you're not in a catastrophic way if everything failed. In other words, you have enough assets to back up what you owe, even if you couldn't pay it off in the future. You get it? Mm-hmm. I think we will be able to pay off our debt in the future with pronounced economic growth of 3% or more, which we're on track right now. For Trump, if we can maintain that for 10 and 20 years consistently, 3 to 4%, and we can maintain spending levels. Now, I'm suggesting we cut them. Let me be clear. But even if we maintain them, we could pay off our debt. But on a note of good news, Joe, we're still so wealthy that even if all broke bad, the housing supply alone is still worth more, significantly more than the debt. I'm not saying it's a good thing if we had to liquidate it all. I'm just saying that when viewing our debt situation that liberals and a lot of Rhino Republicans got us into, mm-hmm. keep in mind, too, it's not as catastrophic as it sounds when you take in our total collective wealth as a country. I know that's a tough thing to hear from a conservative because, you almost want to sound, because then it gives, you're afraid you're going to give politicians, Joe, a license to go out and spend more. Mm. I'm not saying that at all. The situation is clearly catastrophic, owing that much money. But it's not as apocalyptic as it sounds when you take into account our entire collective wealth. All right. What's next? There was a great piece in the Wall Street Journal today. Liberal governors, Joe, are freaking out over this tax reform. Yeah, they're losing their minds. Andrew Cuomo is leading the pack of people losing their minds, the governor of New York. And he is now saying that they're going to have to restructure potentially the tax code in New York because of the limitation for state and local taxes, which is limited to $10,000. So the way I explained this to my friend, cop friend of mine who called me on the phone the other day, he said, you know, how is this thing going to impact me? And I said, well, it depends. What's your salary? So he gave me his salary. I said, well, what are you paying in New York City and New York State taxes for that? And he said, well, I'm paying about, what does he say, $7,000? I said, well, you'll be okay because you can deduct that. You can deduct up to $10,000. Right. But Joe, if you are very wealthy and you're living in a blue state and you're making $1 million and you're paying, you know, New York, whatever it may be, $100,000 in state and local taxes, you're going to pay, you're not going to be able to deduct $90,000 of that now. You get the math, right? You can only deduct $10,000.
Yeah.
So if you're paying $100,000 in state and local taxes, you used to be able to deduct all of that. Mm-hmm. Now you can only deduct $10,000 of that. So $90,000, you are not going to be able to deduct any more from your federal tax bill. Now, this is freaking out liberal governors. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, for the big reason, Joe, and think about this, folks, this is important in understanding why this argument should resonate with a lot of you living in blue states. The taxes are so high in these blue states that people who are wealthy are paying an extraordinary amount of money, and their ability to deduct that money from their federal tax bill lessen the blow a little bit. I've discussed this before. You understand that, right? If you can deduct $100,000 from your federal tax bill and now you can only deduct $10,000, you're going to take a big hit.
Yep.
You're effectively paying more. Number one. Problem number two, Joe, is states like New York and California that are freaking out over the Trump tax cuts are starting to figure out, albeit slowly, politically, they knew this, but politically, their strategy, Joe, of unbelievably progressive taxation is now going to blow up in their faces. And folks, my humble opinion here, mm-hmm. I think this was the genius of the Trump tax plan. People who fought and argued for years in blue states about the benefits of progressive taxation. And what is progressive taxation? It's the idea that rich people should not only pay more money, because they do, just by default, 10% of a million is more than 10% of 100,000, but they should pay a greater percentage. Progressive taxation, the liberals have a love affair with this, is the idea, again, that it's not just paying more money that matters, it's paying a greater percentage. So if a guy who makes $100,000 pays 10%, Joe, a guy who pays a million, liberals think should pay 50%, 60%, because he's rich, mm-hmm. and it's not his, it's the government's money in their view. Now, what's the problem with that? And why is this genius, with what they pulled off in this tax plan? Because if you are a state that's liberal and has a progressive tax code in your state, which California and New York do, Joe, the rich don't only pay more money, they pay a greater percentage too. Now, all of a sudden, that's going to blow up in their faces. Why would that be? Because all of these people who are paying massive state and local taxes now that can't deduct them and moved to liberal states as liberals and got a break for it before are now paying the full load of that and are going to say to themselves, wait, what the hell am I living here for? I could go to Florida and pay nothing. There's no state income tax down here. I could go to Texas, cut my tax burden in half. Why would I stay in New York? Now I can't even write this stuff off. Now, why is that a problem in a progressive tax state? The problem with that, Joe, is very simple. When you have a progressive tax code that hammers the rich and very few people are paying the core of your state and local taxes, mm-hmm. right? You have 100 people and only two or three of them are paying the boatload of the taxes because why? They're paying a greater percentage and they're rich and they're paying a greater amount. If those people leave, Joe, you lose everything. In contrast to a fairer, flatter tax code where everybody's paying 10% and everybody's got skin in the government game, if a few rich people leave, you don't lose much. The fact that people at the lower end of the income and middle end of the income scale in New York and California aren't paying anywhere close to what the rich are paying means now they're going to leave a lot of them because they don't get the deduction anymore. And when they leave, they take everything with them. Do you see how damaging this is going to be?
Yeah, man.
That is why the liberal governors are freaking out. And that is the genius of the Trump tax plan. Making progressives, I'll sum it up this way. The genius of the Trump tax plan was making progressives and liberals feel the impact of their own policies and now making them publicly, governors and other prominent liberals, justify to the masses why they're heavy taxes and progressive taxes. They're not necessarily the same thing. You can have heavy taxes that are fair. You can have progressive taxes that aren't heavy. They have heavy taxes that are heavy and progressive. Now they're going to have to justify to their liberal citizens why they should stay in a state that penalizes them for living there. All right, folks, thanks again for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Please go to Bongino.com, subscribe to my email list, and tune in to Levin tonight. Call in 877-381-3811. I'll take your calls tonight. See you all later.
You just heard the Dan Bongino Show. Get more of Dan online anytime at conservativereview.com. You can also get Dan's podcasts on iTunes or SoundCloud. And follow Dan on Twitter 24/7 at DBongino.